I'm Haley Malziki. I'm a double major in sociology and women's gender and sexuality studies. Today is September 14th, and I am here with Dr. Brittany Proctor. And she is a professor in the Wiggs department here at the College of Worcester. So the first question that we're going to start with is, what is your primary area of study, and how do you incorporate a feminist or queer approach into your teaching?
Thank you for your question. My primary research interests are Black feminist theory, popular culture studies, but mostly I research Black music. I also am writing about the relationship between sound cultures and visual cultures in Black popular music, so thinking about the relationship between album art and sound as it relates to how we theorize Black, what I call Black gender, and to a lesser degree, Black sexuality. And in my own teaching, I am interested in using or teaching materials that are invested in Black feminism, invested in what was once called third world feminisms, but more, now we know it to be more so transnational feminisms. But primarily, I teach the work of Black feminists, of feminists of color from the United States, as well as thinking more globally. And I think my approach, or my use of queer studies in my course, revolves around, again, the using the work of Black queer scholars, teaching queer of color critique, or using some of the research that is a part of a queer of color critique as a field. And more generally, I try to construct my my courses around a kind of non-normative understanding of the field. So my hope is to not always center like cis white women or their work in the kind of courses I teach. So that's always my aspiration. But you know, sometimes the institutionalization of Wiggs doesn't always allow for that. But that's definitely my intention.
So who or what were some of your biggest influences in feminist and queer pedagogies?
That's a great question. One of my biggest influences is a scholar named Jana Brown. She was one of my mentors as an undergraduate at the University of California, Riverside. And she, you know, I don't know if she self-identifies as a Black feminist, but she's definitely invested in the project of Black feminism, and some of my first exposure to Black feminist texts was through her. And her work is invested in thinking about Black feminism alongside performance, so she's definitely been a big influence to me, and she encouraged me to apply to PhD programs, which at the time, right out of, or at least 2 years removed from undergraduate studies, I didn't feel prepared for. And she said, yeah, you'll never know what people think. So I applied to one PhD program and all the rest master programs because of her. And I got into the one PhD program I applied to because of her. And yeah, it's kind of, not to say it's all because of her, but like, that's part of my kind of investment in teaching the work of feminists, particularly Black feminists and transnational feminists or women of color or people of color that identify as feminists. I also think that, you know, my kind of background in the working class has inspired my kind of relationship to understanding the importance of, like, you know, the labor of, you know, not just women, but thinking about the labor of those that are, that cannot adhere to, like, normative categories of gender and sexuality. In particular, I think about my grandmothers and my mother, both of my grandmothers were domestic workers, and my mother, like, similarly, like, had done in-home service, so I was exposed to, like, the feminization of certain types of labor early on, especially as they relate to, like, the labor of Black women and, like, Black women's relationship to, you know, domesticity for not necessarily in relation to their home, but to other folks' homes. So, you know, to kind of be exposed to those kinds of disparities early on also makes me feel invested in teaching the work that articulates, like, the kinds of ways that, you know, folk have to, you know, certain folk have to do certain types of labor and are more vulnerable and susceptible to, you know, being exploited when it comes to, like, the, when it comes to labor or, like, you know, having to, in the case of my, like, my grandmothers and my mother having to engage in an occupation that carried the taint of slavery, right? Like, what is it, you know? Not to say that being a domestic worker is slavery by another name, but in many ways the kind of primacy of Black women working in the homes of often white people, like, you know, that was, like, reproduced in what I saw my grandmother's having to do and what my mother had to do to survive. So all of those kinds of things have, like, inspired my kind of investments in feminist and queer pedagogy. And in queer pedagogy thinking, like, just thinking through, like, a critique of, you know, heteronormativity or heteropatriarchy, right? Like, that field or that analytic being the way that I engage in that way.
So when was a time when you saw queer feminist pedagogy have positive influence or work well in the classroom?
I think Andrea Smith's Three Pillars of White Supremacy is a great text to use to kind of think about the stakes of gender and sexuality as they relate to race outside of, you know, a kind of identity-based, like, formulation or understanding that I think really strikes students, so that in a structural way they have to think about, you know, race, right, and gender and sexuality alongside one another. So it's not so much how one identifies, but how, you know, in the case of Andrea Smith, that particular piece, right, the ways in which, you know, being Indigenous and a woman, or being Black and a woman, or, you know, being brown and a woman is a problem for the kind of social order that we live in, right? Mm-hmm. It's not that our identities in and of themselves are, you know, is what we have to kind of articulate as the primacy, but kind of how, you know, who we are is made a problem by this current social order that we're in. And I think that piece and also Kimberly Crenshaw's work on intersectionality is a really profound piece, especially in the moment in which we think intersectionality is meant to articulate, like, identities. Like, you know, I have six intersectionalities because, you know, I am a woman and I'm Black and I'm queer and, you know, I have a mental disability, et cetera, right? That's not the kind of way in which he's articulating or using intersectionality or conceiving of intersectionality, right? It's about a structural scaffolding that allows, you know, the matrices of race and gender and class to make Black women and women of color more vulnerable to facing certain forms of violence, right? Make them more vulnerable towards, like, living in poverty, et cetera, et cetera. And so in that way, I think that reading is also a great way to, is great feminist and, I think, you know, work that can be considered queer studies work that's trying to disarticulate, you know, identity, right? The primacy of identity in women's gender and sexuality studies, and get students to really think about structurally, institutionally, what is the root of a lot of the violence and ills we face in the world. So I think that's a great, those work very well in the classroom, I believe.
So last question, mm-hmm. What motivated you to participate in this workshop and what do you hope to get out of it?
Oh, that's a great question. I think as someone who is embarking upon their first job outside of, or after, you know, getting my doctorate, it's important for me to kind of sharpen the tools of my pedagogy belt, per se, and, like, you know, I feel like I'm sure many, many folk coming out of graduate school don't feel like they've gotten adequate training when it comes to thinking about pedagogy. And I've been fortunate enough to have mentors and experiences in graduate school that allowed me to teach, you know, and allowed me to, you know, kind of learn certain forms of pedagogy and engage in skills and learn methods and tools. But I also think this is a great opportunity for me to kind of, you know, hone in on some of those skills and think about what might be working for, you know, for my how I see my own pedagogy and what I want to be as a teacher, which from graduate school to now is, you know, it's starting to shift and change. And also because, quite honestly, this I'm a visiting faculty and this is my first job, and teaching two sections of Intro to Women's Gender and Sexuality Studies, I've had somewhat of a hard time engaging students, or rather getting students to feel like they can talk and take up space in the classroom. So I think this was also a way for me to kind of talk about some of the challenges I've been facing and to also think about how I might tailor the rest of the course and think about, and also just think that sometimes it's not me as much as it's, you know, sometimes a set of circumstances that make teaching this kind of work hard. But it's been really great to just have a sounding board amongst other folk in the field of wigs and just think about more concretely like what it means to do this work in the classroom, because I don't think that always happens, which is pretty sad, but I'm pretty grateful to have been here and have participated.
Yeah. It sounds like the workshops that I've seen the description for sound really cool.
Yeah.
So I'm happy that, like, you were able to experience some great speakers and some great topics to actually, like, grow from.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. I think so, too.
Okay. Well, thank you for your time, and we really appreciate you providing the voice that you have.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me, and I think it's really cool that you guys get to do this in your class, you know. And thinking about pedagogy, this is a great way to, you know, expose students to an alternative means to kind of engage with some of the ideas that you guys are learning in the context of class. So I think that's always really cool. Really cool. Well, I'll stop talking.